Yeah, good evening. So we're in Ezra Hashem and Chodesh Halvavos, Shabbat Bitoch and Perek Dalid. The paragraph that starts about Hefresh. And here the Chodesh Halvavos is talking about Bitoch and Hishtadlus when it comes to Avodas Hashem. So here he was just making the point that when it comes to Avodas Hashem, we're actually in a very advantaged situation. Because when it comes to material life, you never really know what is the correct Hishtadlus. You try to figure out, you have to daven to Hashem even to just figure out what the right Hishtadlus is. Can often be tricky to figure out. Whereas when it comes to pleasing Hashem, when it comes to your Olam Haba, there the Hishtadlus is absolutely clear. You know in an absolute way that this is going to bring benefits. So therefore, he says, when it comes to choosing the right path, to choosing the right actions, the right things to do, there's no room for bitachon. There's no room for leaving it up to Hashem. There's no room to say that Hashem will make me feel the right thing, or who knows if this is really the right thing. No, it's 100% clear. Sometimes it can be tough to figure out in the more fine details of Avodas Hashem, which is the right route to take. But in terms of Hashem gave us, like we had last week, handed us on a silver platter all the instructions to a T as to exactly how to get as far as we can in terms of Olam Haba. So, once again, where does Bitochan and Hishtadlus come in when it comes to Avodas Hashem, Ruchnius? It only comes in with regard to getting the act done. Now, last week I mentioned, I just want to follow up. Last week we mentioned that it's I'm not sure if I should even say it seems in the Chovas of us, but it may be. He talked about how if a person made the decision, put in the efforts to get it done, and it didn't get done, he said he'd get the reward for the decision. And if it actually gets done, you'll get the great reward for the deed. So I noted, and people asked me about this afterwards, so I want to come back to it, that the subtle implication of the Chovas HaLevavos' wording is that you actually get more reward if you actually get it done. So people asked me afterwards, is that really so? Don't we say that the Schar of the Machshav is exactly as though you got it done? So I looked into it a bit further. It seems that there's actually two approaches on the subject, but it shouldn't really bother us. I'll explain why. Let's say we do say, meaning again, let me just lay down the question here. When a person really did everything in his power to get a mitzvah done, we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzaref machshava lemaisa. A person did everything he could to get something done, didn't actually manage, didn't happen. So I say that Hashem rewards him as though he did it. So there, here, there's question, and there seem to be different approaches if you look at the different Sfarim. Does it mean literally he gets mamish the same reward as the person who actually did it? Or does it mean, no, there is also a level of reward for the decision itself? So it seems that there are two approaches, and I want to bring out a couple of points. Just, it doesn't have to deflate you, meaning it shouldn't really bother us whether it's this way or that way, because in any event, mitzvahs are rewarded to different degrees. And we never really know what the exact reward is for any mitzvah. So let's say you do the mitzvah of tzedakah and keeping Shabbos and keep with other aim and a few other mitzvahs. And if I were to come and tell you, well, this one gets more than the other one, say that. I mean, yes, that's the way it works. It doesn't need to bother us that why doesn't this one get as much as that one? We do all the mitzvahs we can possibly do. And then we get the full effect at the end. And it doesn't need to bother us if one mitzvah is precisely the same as the other or it isn't. So that's number one. So if we're told that the decision is one level and the actual mice is another level, fine. Exactly whether we're going to be getting 2 billion or 2.2 billion for a mitzvah doesn't really need to concern us too much. We know that the schar for any mitzvah, any level of a mitzvah, is immense. So we don't have to be bothered by exactly how much relative to what. I'll bring this out. probably told this mice here in the past, but I'll bring it out. Let's say it again. We do a lot of repetition here, and I'm, even though I sometimes express apology for that, I'm not really apologetic. I think it's good. So there was a mice with the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, and his wife and a friend of hers. They had like they used to do a lot of mitzvahs together. They were involved in various tzedakah endeavors that they used to do together. And they used to like there's different causes and different people that needed help, and they would go around, among other things, they would deal with tzedakah cases together, which meant that they would go around to the more affluent women of the community trying to collect money to help for these different things. Fine. So at one point, they were involved in many mitzvah endeavors over many years. And as they were growing older, they said to each other, they made a deal. However this works exactly, but they made a deal that whoever snifter and goes to Shamayim first will come back and report to the other one how it works, how it is up there. So Lamaisa, the friend was snifter first, not the girl's wife. Her friend was snifter first. And she came to the girl's wife in a dream shortly afterwards. And she said that essentially it doesn't really work that way, that you can tell somebody you'll come to them in a dream. Like, you don't necessarily have that right. You can't. But she was actually given special permission that she can come. And she said, even so, I'm not actually allowed to really describe to you what goes on here. What I will tell you is this. What I will tell you is this. And she said, I don't know if you remember that one time. She said, what you'll be enjoying, what I'm enjoying now for our different endeavors is beyond description. And she said, but I just want to bring out one point to you in order to illustrate a little bit. She said, I don't know if you remember one time we were involved in collecting for some tzedakah cause together. And there was a certain woman that we wanted to get to. And we came to her home and she wasn't home and we were heading away. And then we saw her on the other side of the street. So you waved your finger to get her attention, waved your hands to get her attention. Then, okay, we sat, we spoke with her, etc. So what was that? That was just a little act that wasn't even really the mitzvah itself. It was just kind of like an act toward, an effort toward getting the mitzvah going. She said, you have no, you cannot possibly imagine what's in store for you for that wave of the hand. So let's appreciate that, how the tiniest of not even mitzvahs, not even something that makes a great of a mitzvah, right? It's an attempt to get a mitzvah going, right? Has the sechar is beyond something that we can't comprehend in this world. It's simply beyond us in this world. So therefore, again, it doesn't have to bother us if we hear that one mitzvah is more than another, or this one is not quite as big as that one. It's all way beyond. I'll bring it out from one other angle. This is the one time that I actually heard Ovadia Yosef speak. He made a point that really left an indelible impression on me. He said that it says that Tzchar Mitzvah Ba'al Malek. You don't really get the reward for a mitzvah in this world. So he said, I'm going to show you why. And he said that he invoked the Gemara. The Gemara says about Nebuchadnezzar. Now, why did Nebuchadnezzar earn the merit of ruling over the entire civilized world at that point? That because he had been the secretary of the king of Babel earlier, during the time when there was the whole episode with Chizkiyahu in Yerushalayim, Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, and Sancheriv came up against him, and there was the whole miraculous story where, right, the Assyrian army laid siege to Yerushalayim. They had hundreds of thousands or millions of soldiers surrounding Yerushalayim. Look, they were going to overrun Yerushalayim like in moments. And then the night before, Malach Hashem went out and smote the entire camp. Okay, we're not going to get into all the details of the story, but whatever it is, the mightiest army in the world was basically smote dead right outside of Yerushalayim. That was the end of the Assyrian Empire. So the rest of the world was in awe. So the king of Babel sent a letter. Nebuchadnezzar was the royal secretary. So he dictated a letter to Chizkiyahu. He wanted a tribute. He dictated a letter to Chizkiyahu. So the letter said, to the honorary Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda, and to the honorary God of Yisrael. So Nebuchadnezzar, he was actually the scribe. So he penned the letter, he sent it off, and then he said, 1 minute, there's something backward about that. It should have said first to the God of Yisrael and then to Chizkiyahu, the king of Yehuda. So he wanted to change it. So he got up and took 3 steps towards, wanted to see if he could catch the courier. He took 3 steps toward the courier and then he said, oh, forget it, I'm not going to catch him. Anyways, he sat back down and continued his work. It says those 3 steps he took in an attempt for Hashem's honor. Didn't even actually follow up, right? Didn't actually get anywhere. He took 3 steps in Hashem's honor, and in that zchus, he was given reign over the entire world. So Rav Avadia Yosef said, this is for a person who didn't even actually do a mitzvah. It was basically a couple of steps toward a mitzvah, and he was what we call Eina Mitzvah V'Oisin, right? We're talking about a non-Jew who wasn't really obligated at all. We know that the halacha is that a person being obligated in a mitzvah gives you that much more reward. So he said, and he was given reign over the entire world. So automatically you understand when you're talking about a Jew who actually does a bona fide mitzvah that Olam Hazeh simply doesn't have the capacity to contain the schar. Question.
Technical question, but if you think about non-Jews who do mitzvahs that they're not obligated to do, other than the 7 or whatever, no high things, so do they get credit for that?
They do. They certainly do. They do, and there is such a thing. I can't explain exactly how it works and what the differences are, but there is such a thing as non-Jews having merit in the next world. We find that in a few different Gemaras. I can't tell you exactly how it works, just like I can't tell you exactly how it works that Jews have merit in the next world. It's actually a discussion coming up. This is all way beyond us. It's too much for us to grasp in our physical state. But yes, they do. They certainly are credited with that. Okay. That's as far as last week goes. Now let's move on to this week. So now we move on to the next step of the discussion. So here we discussed the place for bitachon and nishtadlus when it comes to doing mitzvahs. And now he says there's the next step. Sorry, I lost. Okay. Avapirush Achelik Achamishi. The next section that we have to discuss is Uchevish Levarim Asher Te'altam and Niskam is Abrim Elzulasim. There's another discussion of Bitachon when it comes to mitzvahs that involve other people. Meaning when it came to, up to now, he was talking about just personal mitzvahs, mitzvahs that don't involve anybody else. And here we say that the whole discussion of Bitachon and Mishtadlus is the understanding that when it comes to choosing the mitzvah, that's completely up to you. Don't bring Hashem, meaning don't bring Bitachon into the picture. It's not about trusting that Hashem will make you make the right decisions. You have to make the right decisions. The Bitachon comes in, meaning leaving it up to Hashem comes in, that after I made all the efforts, will it actually happen or not? That's in Hashem's hands. Now we talk about interpersonal mitzvahs. And here we're talking about those mitzvahs that will affect other people. Interpersonal mitzvahs. Kitzdaka, the Maisa, right? Limuda Chachma, teaching Torah. Tzavos Batoiv, Vazher Mehara, and to instruct people as to the right way, enjoining people to do good, admonishing people not to do bad. These are all mitzvahs that involve other people. Ule Hashem Ha'amonois, and integrity, you know, returning debts when you need to, ulastir asoid, keeping other people's secrets, uladaber toiv, to speak positively of other people, lasois hatoiv, to do good for other people, chesed, kibud avos, kibud avim, right? Vashavat sar shem elu elikim, that's what we translate today as kiruv. V'horeis bnei adam darkei toivasam, in general, giving good eitzes to people, lachmalaniyem, olarachim aleim, to care for the poor, having compassion on them. Lisbol cherpasam kishimeiroisam elu avoida, umiyacholoisam umiyaram bigmulo v'ainish. Interesting, in a few places in the Sefer, it kind of makes this its own category. He says, bearing people's ridicule when you do admonish for the right thing. If you're going to be telling people, instructing people to do the right thing, etc., you're going to be opening yourself up for ridicule when you're going to tell people things that they prefer not to hear, that are uncomfortable for them. So he says that's kind of puts that as a mitzvah of itself, to be ready to bear the ridicule when you tell people they have to do things that they'd rather not know about, or tell them that certain things are wrong, or they would prefer to feel that it's not. So now he says, "Of the Yesha Bitochen Bizeh, how do we apply Bitochen in these areas? Shia Adam Tzoifen Bilvavoy Kalamaisim Ma'eleva Adem Elohim. Ve'yivchar Asoisam Yisabivalem." It's the same as with the other category in terms of you have to want these things, you have to decide to do them, you have to put in the efforts to do them. Kimfima Sheik Damnu Bachelik Avi, just as we discussed in the previous section. When it comes to Bechira, okay. Now here there's the added element, because here there's an added challenge. When you're doing mitzvahs that involve other people, there's an added challenge, and that is that the focus becomes interpersonal. The issue is to be interacting with the person, doing the mitzvah with this person, while my focus is on Hashem. I'm directing my acts to Hashem. And this gets challenging. I'm doing chesed for this person, or say I'm dedicating a building. Okay, I'm paying $1 million for a building, and it's a whole big ASIC in the community, and there's a newspaper write-up about it, and there's a whole ceremony, and there's people are interviewing me and all kinds of things like that. To be able to do that, but your activity is not a social activity. There's a lot of social activity surrounding it, but I'm doing it toward Hashem. Not in order to earn a good reputation. Not hoping for some sort of reward from them. Not because you want to put yourself up over them. So this is a tough area. I am interacting with this person because of that mitzvah, while my focus is on not pleasing that person, but pleasing Hashem. And then, again, you make the efforts, and you leave it up to Hashem, that it should have the desired effects. This is particularly relevant when it comes to teaching, when it comes to Kiruv, the understanding that we do ours, and we don't gauge our success by the effects. First of all, we don't know how to measure the effects. You really never know. And second of all, because it's the same as we've been discussing with the other mitzvahs. That's not up to you. That's not part of the mitzvah. That's not part of the mitzvah. It's an added benefit. But our mitzvah is putting in the efforts, doing what we need to do to get it done. Tell a couple of incidents to this effect. First of all, people had created a yeshiva for struggling youth, and they were finding after some years of being in operation that Chavra would come into their yeshiva for a year, for 2 years, it would be great. You know, they'd be connecting, etc. And then they'd move on and drop it all and basically back to where they started. So these Rosh Yeshivas were getting very dejected. It was getting demoralizing. It was like, I'm putting in all this effort and I'm seeing the progress, and as soon as they leave, it's all gone. So they went to Reb Aaron Leib. They went to Reb Aaron Leib Shteinman and they told him, you know, this is just like depressing. Is there a point? Like, should we just, maybe we should just drop the effort? So he said, one minute. He said, I want to understand something. He said, while these boys are in the yeshiva, they're putting on tefillin. He said, yeah. So he said, is the point of putting on tefillin just so that they'll put on tefillin later also? There's a major gain in the fact that for this year, these kids were putting on tefillin and learning Torah. Who said that's not enough of an end in itself? Why do you have to be worried about what's going to be happening afterwards? This is a very major gain in and of itself. But the truth is, it goes further than that. It goes further than that also. And it's the understanding that this is certainly so when it comes to kiruv or teaching or things like that, that we have certain objective ways of measuring, was I successful, was I not successful? Did the person become frum? What does it mean, become frum? Well, put on a yarmulke, keeps Shabbos. Even keeping Shabbos is not enough. As long as I didn't put on the yarmulke, I don't feel that I made it, right? But did the person become frum, however I define that? He's keeping Shabbos, regular basis, put on the yarmulke, send his kids to Torah schools, etc. But one minute, there are so many different levels of what can actually be being affected in a person's mind. Let's say, if we're talking in like funny kinds of terms, let's say you got a person to keep Shabbos but not to keep kosher. Is that a success?
Yeah.
Of course it is. But beforehand, the person wasn't keeping Shabbos and now he is. So if we understand that that's a success, what if I get the person to a place where he didn't actually make changes in his life, but he believes? Is that a success? Of course that's a success. Well, on paper, the person didn't become frum. So there's no question, when you're having an impact on people, you can never really know what the effect is. You can never really know how you're impacting them. And sometimes you even have to use imagination to give yourself that boost, to give yourself that encouragement. Try to imagine what's actually going on inside the person. The fact that a person feels a bit warmer about Torah and mitzvahs, a bit warmer about Yiddishkeit, that means that he's in a different place in terms of his emuna. That's called being makar of the person. That's called being makar of the person. That's actually a success. Question.
There's a story about Rav Aaron Leib that kids from the Heder would come and he would test them. So there was one kid, you know, he tried one, and he'd give easy questions so they get this candy. He'd always give candy. And there was one kid, he tried one question, two questions, three questions. The kid couldn't get a question. And finally, after all the kids left, he brought the kid back and he said, I'm giving you two candies for trying. And from what I remember from this story, the kid ended up going off the derech, who knows what. But what actually brought him back was he went back to visit his father in B'nai Brak, and he ended up going to a shir of Aaron Leib because he remembered this feeling of the two candies. And it was such a positive feeling in him that somebody cared that he was just trying, not necessarily doing, that's what ultimately turned him around.
Classic example of never being able to gauge just by looking at the here and now as to what's actually being impacted. But what? It goes back to what we were discussing. You know that you are following the instructions that Hashem laid down. That means that you succeeded. Don't look at material gauges of success. If you know that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, this is what Hashem wants you to be doing, this was a major success. What actually happens in the material realm, you can't necessarily know. And anyways, it's not really your business. Okay. We move on. Now he adds an interesting little piece. And with all these things, things that do involve by nature other people's involvement, the more you can set it up such that whoever doesn't have to know about it won't know about it, the better. Because when it's concealed, the person gets more reward if it's actually concealed than when it isn't, than when it's well known. Umashalu yuchalas tiroi? And what if I can't conceal it? What if everybody knows about it? Does that mean that I lost my reward? So certainly not. So he says, it just places more on you in order to get the same place of reward. Meaning like this. Off the cuff, a mitzvah that was done in private is going to get you more reward than a mitzvah that was done in public. What if you say, okay, look, the mitzvah is happening in public. I can't help it. How can I get myself to that same place of reward? You're going to have to put in more effort. What more effort are we talking about? So he says, you have to go back to really internalize what we discussed earlier. That every benefits that you hope to get from a mitzvah come only from Hashem. Meaning like this. Why is a mitzvah that's done in private more rewarded than a mitzvah that's done in public? Because of a very fundamental reason. This really throws back also on the issue that we were discussing earlier about a mitzvah you didn't actually do, you get the same level of reward. And this is something that's also be coming up later. A little bit of a tangent, because I really want to get to the full depth of this point rather than just apply it to its point here. Mitzvahs, every mitzvah has its external element and its internal element. Meaning, and we're going to see soon, the Chavis HaVavis says, why didn't Hashem tell us how much schar you get for every mitzvah? When it comes to Averis, Hashem gave a very clear itemized list. This Aver gets this punishment. This Aver gets this punishment. This one gets this punishment. Why doesn't it work that way with mitzvahs? And one of the answers he gives, which we'll be seeing over the next couple of weeks in Mitzvah Hashem, is that it doesn't work that way with mitzvahs. Why? Because with a mitzvah, it's not just the act that was done, but it's everything that was behind it. Goes a very, very long way in determining how much schar there is. So let's say, for example, you can have, here's an example that I, here's how it comes together in my mind. What is the highest mountain in the world?
Everest.
Everybody knows that it's Everest. So the truth is that actually, if you're really measuring a mountain from the base to the top, there's a higher mountain than Mount Everest. What's that? Mauna Kea. What's that? I think it's called Mauna Kea. Maybe that also, it could be that there are other mountains higher than Mount Everest once you understand this point. But to my understanding, from base to peak, the tallest mountain in the world is actually a mountain somewhere off the Japanese islands called Mauna Kea. Just what? It's below sea level. And Mount Everest is the tallest mountain from the ground up. But there are other mountains, and maybe there are others, the ones that you mentioned, that are taller than Everest, just that you don't see them. But most of their height is below sea level. So this is how it works with mitzvahs. You can have two people are putting on tzitzis, right? By one of them, it's completely mechanical. By the other one, there's so much, I'm sorry?
Every time you put it on, it's
the other one is when he's putting it on, he's channeling so much gratitude into the mitzvah. He's channeling love into the mitzvah, such that you can have a person who, by one, the mitzvah is a completely external deed, right? And by the other, yeah, there's this much external, but then there's 95% under the surface that's going into that mitzvah. And that's what Hashem rewards for. This is what Avigdor Miller used to say, right? One of the great principles of. You say that the Torah basically can be summed into three instructions. Walk secretly with Hashem. It's one of the three most fundamental aspects of Torah. So Rabbi Miller said, walk secretly in front of Hashem. Asoy smishpat means do justice. We understand that like encompasses so much of Torah. Avas chesed, love chesed. Yes, that encompasses so much of Torah. Do things secretly with Hashem. Sounds like a very specific need of doing things in concealment. Why is that something that is like named as encompassing so much of Torah? So he said like this. He said, it doesn't really mean things that nobody knows about. It means what we're discussing. Let's say you're doing something that's very public. Let's say you're giving a speech to 10,000 people. You're giving a speech to 10,000 people. would say that that's the opposite of doing something in concealment. He said, no, the directive there is that even there, have most of it done in concealment. Meaning what? Yes, I'm giving a speech to 10,000 people, but most of what's going on here is underneath the surface. It's that I am actually right now involved with Hashem, and I'm not busy thinking about what kind of impression I'm making on these people. What are these people going to be thinking of me, etc. But Hashem, I'm trying to bring these people close to you because I love you, Hashem, etc. This is all beneath the surface. You can have mitzvahs that are done in a very, very public kind of way. But still, we want to get to a place where what's above the surface is above the surface. And that's going to be uniform. Anybody who puts on tzitzis, what's above the surface is going to be above the surface. But I want to be in a place where my putting on tzitzis is getting so much deeper below the surface. So yes, it can be a public mitzvah. The Gemara gives the example of mitzvahs that can't be done in private, right? Being the Sameach Chosam Mekala, or Halvaya Sameis, okay? Being the Sameach Chosam Mekala, let's say a person comes and says, look, I'm a big anav. I don't want anybody to know that I actually do the mitzvah of dancing for a Chosam and Kala. I want to only do it in private, secretly. How do you do that? They say, well, you know, you inform the Chosam and Kala, listen, Rabbi, so I'm a big anav. I know that there are 500 people dancing here, but I don't want to be the 501st and everybody will see it. Right, I want to do it. So I want you to come to me with to a side room, and I'm going to do the mitzvah bitzina. Nobody should know about it. No, dance for them in front of the crowd. Let everybody see you doing that fancy dance in the middle. Right, but where's my mind? My mind is Hashem. These are your children. I want to give that extra injection into enabling them to get their home started on the right foot. So yes, of course, this is a mitzvah that's being done in public, but so much more of it is under the surface. This is the point that we're making here. We want our mitzvahs, whether they're concealed or being done in public, right? A speech to 10,000 people, Simchas Chosam Mekala, burying the dead, etc. These are mitzvahs that are done in public, but in terms of my mind and heart, in terms of what's beneath the surface, is there only a tiny drop of that? Or is it a type of thing that this is what's above the surface, but if you dig deeper, you'll find that it goes so much deeper down. And really, that's what determines the schar for a mitzvah. There's the level where every mitzvah is uniform. Tzitzis, right? But then Hashem says, how much of a sense of dedication was in the mitzvah? How much love was in the mitzvah? How much awe was in the mitzvah? How much submission to Hashem was in the mitzvah? How much gratitude is channeled into that mitzvah? These are all, you can have two people doing the same mitzvah, but one person, in one case, it's a $1 billion mitzvah, and in the other case, it's a, quote unquote, we shouldn't use the word, but mamish, just for illustrative purposes, it's a cheaper generic strain. There's no such thing, okay? But I'm talking relatively, we have to use material terms.
Isn't it sometimes important to daka do the mitzvah publicly to inspire other people, like bidding on aliyahs or
that's right,
you know, stuff like that, where you're actually, or even dancing at a wedding, like to get other people involved to do the same thing?
That's right. That's a very good point. And that's why we're stressing here. Yes, very often daka do the mitzvah in public. Daka do the mitzvah in public, like example you gave. Wealthy people will sometimes be concerned about making a public pledge. You know, the general directive that's given when it's a thing like this. You know, Mel, if you come, you want to dedicate a building, and it's not like other people are bidding for it. Okay, fine. Even there, it's actually encouraged. Yes, put your name on the building so that people see that there's such a thing. Right? We want it to be, the atmosphere should be that this is what conscientious people do. This is the value of a person having money. Like the Gemara said, the Kuzari talks about this. You know, you may think in religious terms that money is like something like, not like holy. It's like shaykh to the mundane. We say, no, in Yiddishkeit, poverty is a value and wealth is a value. Everything is a value. Or each of them could be a very significant spiritual pitfall. It can go either way. So yes, when it comes to bidding for a mitzvah, do it publicly. Let everybody see what the covet of a mitzvah is.
But I know I have a brother who gave a very big donation to Shiva. And he said, if you mention my name, you will never see another bank.
So you know what? We have to talk out of both sides of our mouth at the same time. That's right.
Humble person.
There's major value in either way. There's major value in either way. But what we'll say is, and here's the point that really the Chovas HaLevavos is making here, we're really just repeating it from another angle. When a person does it privately, the way you just described, without anybody knowing about it, his reward is basically, the full extent of the reward is basically guaranteed. Does it privately, it's automatically L'Shem Shamayim, and you don't have to work too hard to make it L'Shem Shamayim. By doing it privately, I'm making it L'Shem Shamayim. When a person does it publicly, there can be immense value in it. But here, like we said before, now you're up against the challenge. You have to invest much more effort to make sure it's L'Shem Shamayim. Because, let's say we encourage the rich fellow to bid publicly. And he says, oh, great, I wanted everybody to see how much money I have anyways. And now the rabbi said it's the right thing to do. So, hey, guys, who can possibly compete with me? Come on, guys, you're small fry. Look at this, $40,000. The last pledge was $700, right? So, you know, everybody knows exactly who I am, right? So here we say that, wait. It's fine. It might be fine, but your reward is going to be much, much, much less because this was very, very much about yourself and very little about Hashem. If you are doing that public bidding, if you're doing the mitzvah in that public way, you have a challenge now to take a step back and say, I want to detach myself from all the public recognition to get to a place where it means nothing to me and where Hashem and his being pleased with it is really what is driving me. And that's really what speaks to me. And that's a very tough thing. And that's why we say in a general way, it's easier to do a mitzvah b'tzina and get the full schar. Once you are doing it publicly, it places a lot more on you if you really want to get to that full level of schar. It's very hard. But like we said, it certainly can be done, but it places a much greater demand on the person.
In other words, if there's a choice between doing it privately or publicly, and it's not, you know, you're not taking any other component, it's better to do it privately.
Yes, yes. We'll say all factors equal, better to do it privately. Though, there may be certain situations where you'll be told, under the circumstances, actually better to do it publicly because this is an area where people are weakened. This is an area that needs to be encouraged. This is an area where we want others, you know, to move it into the public eye a little bit. It will almost be like external considerations why Davka to make it public. So yes, we would say that the default assumption is for talking Kor Avodas Hashem, go private. Go private. If it was possible, perhaps I should be giving all my shiurim in private without anybody knowing about it. Right? But I've been told. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Nobody knows about how you give an issue.
Exactly. What have I accomplished? That's right. That's right. Exactly.
So that's the whole.
That's right. But you know what? It does place that challenge on me because I could easily come to a place, and this is something that I have to struggle against, where, wow, I give shiur and people admire me. This is great, right? So it very much becomes about Olam Hazeh and about me. And it really does place a challenge to be able to say, no, that's not what I want out of this. That's not what I want out of this. What I want is Hashem to be pleased. I want to impress Hashem, kiviyachol. That's what I'm trying to impress with how I'm bringing his children closer to him. And hopefully also by bringing myself closer to him in the process. So yeah, the default is whatever can be done privately or to whatever extent it can be done privately. That is the natural assumption. Just yes, there can be other considerations as to why Davka, there's going to be benefit in doing it in a more public kind of way, and then do it in a more public kind of way. For example, even just something that's not such a public thing, learning in a mismadrash. We might say, on the one hand, there's benefit to just learn in your room, by yourself, let people not know exactly how much learning you're doing. But on the other hand, first of all, if you're learning in the Mismedrash every day, and people know to expect you there, it actually places a certain pressure on you. And not L'Shem Shamayim pressure, which is a very good thing. And you should actually seek that not l'shem shemayim pleasure, l'shem shemayim pressure. And l'shem shemayim decide, I want to do it in the Beis Medrash so that I'll have that pressure, and that way I'll learn more. Everybody follow me on that? And B, when you have a Beis Medrash, every added person who's learning there is adding more of an atmosphere of, this is what the people of this community do. So here we'll say, yes, go do it in public. There can be many other reasons why you can do it in public. Just what? We have to understand that, yes, then it places upon us that added challenge of, can I put in the effort to make it as much L'shem Shemayim as possible, despite the public element of it?
Is there, just a side point, but you know, we know that davening with the minyan, so when there are 10 men in the minyan, then the all the private averos go together into the klal, and right, there's like this whole opinion of Hashem looks at the klal and doesn't take part of individuals.
Right.
The strength in the klal.
Right, and that's right.
Is it true in something like learning also that there's, you know,
Let me just distinguish between the concepts. Beroiv Hamhadras Melech is not exactly the point that you were talking about. Beroiv Hamhadras Melech is a simpler concept that simply means that part of our objective in any mitzvah is Kvod Shamayim. The more people are doing it together, the more Kvod Shamayim we're creating. That's number one. And that there's no Inyan Dafka in the 10. There's the other issue of that 10 has a 10 turns into a klal rather than a yachid, meaning 9 is 9 people. 10 is not. 10 is a minion. 10 is a entity called klal Yisrael. It's a micro klal Yisrael, 10. 10 is representative of the 600,000. And they're already, like you said, it's not viewed as individuals with an individual cheshbon. This is klal Yisrael coming to Hashem, and it's klal Yisrael coming to Hashem. This is one of the reasons why men will be told about the fundamental importance of davening with a minion, is that person sends a tefillah up on his own. Now, women who don't have the inyan of davening with a minion, so they have it's a different route. But when we're talking about a man, say he sends up a tefillah on his own that he davened by himself, okay, there's a lot of kiviyachal spiritual bureaucracy that it has to go through. There's going to be a lot of analysis of the tefillah, see, is this really worthy of going up, etc. And the person's level may impact how high the tefillah will go. Whereas once you're talking about a klal coming from, as with the koyach of klal Yisrael, it is just doors open by themselves. Doors open by themselves, and they come up that much easier. So again, we're differentiating between the two concepts. There's the klal aspect, but yes, mitzvahs that are done by klal Yisrael are allowed up much more without distinction. And then there's the issue of the Roiv Hamhadras Melech, that stop. The more people are gathering together, the more of a commotion we make out of a mitzvah, in a very material, physical way, the more commotion we make out of a mitzvah, the more of a Kvod Shamayim it is. Okay, agutavach.
I want to make an announcement. On Tuesday at 4 o'clock, if you walk down the street a little bit, you'll see signs.